these artists. And Father, I'm grateful to be a part of that, to be able to worship you today in all those things that we're going to do. Father, I do pray for the mothers. I feel inadequate to represent what the mothers really mean to each of us, Father. There's no way that I can appreciate my mom enough, and I know each one of us have that same sentiment. Father, I do pray that you're with mom right now, that the discomfort that she's had with her stomach, that you'll just be with her, give her some comfort from that, Father. And if it works out, Father, we can help celebrate this afternoon with a family get-together. I'm grateful to be given the opportunity to open up your word, Father, to present the truth that that you show us here in your word. We're grateful again to be here in Bloomfield. I pray that you're just with anything I say today, that it'll bless you. We pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. It's good to be in Bloomfield again. It's good to get good reports on Pastor Lee and on Joe. And it seems like you guys have got your ailments like a lot of us, but it's nice to know that everybody's recovering from that. What I wanted to talk to you today is about a godly mother. And the Bible has a lot of examples of that. It seems like we focus a lot on the men in the Bible, and we don't focus enough on the, in my opinion, the females. It needs to be done more than just on Mother's Day. But it's nice to have that opportunity. As I mentioned, mom is not feeling the best. At least that's what she's telling everybody. Somebody had said that she doesn't want to be here. She didn't want to hear what I was going to say about her. But it's all respect. The one thing about my family, there was always laughter. There was always good times. And I used to, in high school, work at Farmer's Market. And I remember being back on the produce aisle, and I could hear Dad and Mom come in on shopping day. Back in those days, it was when they got double green stamps. You guys can remember that. But I remember working with somebody there one day, and he goes, "Who is that? They're just laughing all the time." I said, "That's my dad and mom." And every aisle or every person they'd meet, there was laughter. There was good times there. That's something that we transfer as a family to our kids even. There's always laughter. There's there. What does the Bible say about a godly mother? I mean, when you pick people to study, I could have talked about any number of different mothers here, but the example I'm going to share with you is the earthly mother of Jesus, Mary. The Bible says a lot about that. She was given a task that was beyond what she could do herself. She didn't think she was worthy of that, but God had a different plan for her, didn't he? One of the things I want to point out, I may have shared this before, but it just goes without saying just how important a stable family is for the well-being, the raising of kids. In the jail ministry, I hand out Mother's Day cards. We've got an outbreak in the jail now in La Plata County. I'm the only one coming in to do religious services, so I was encouraged not to hand out cards this year. But I think I've told you this before, but the first year I did that, the population of the jail was about 200 inmates, and I gave out about 250 cards. A lot of inmates would want more than one to give to their wife, their mother, their grandmother. Come Father's Day, I gave out 12. I have to go through those cards. We have to make sure there's no restraining orders. We have to make sure they're really being sent to the right people. Some of those were addressed to females on a Father's Day card, and the comments would be, "You were the closest thing I ever had to a father." I know this is Mother's Day, but do you see the connection here? If a young person does not have a stable father and mother, the odds are so stacked against them. I do a Monday night Bible study, and I tell the inmates, in some ways, what you're going through is really not your fault. And I give them those statistics. If I'd have been in that same group of people, if mom would have been trying to raise me by myself, statistically, I could have fallen right into that same trap. I had parents, both dad and mom. I had grandparents that kept me on the straight and narrow. They pulled me aside. I still remember my grandfather saying, "I fought all my life to protect this name. You're not going to mess it up." He meant that. And if a young man doesn't have that, a young female, it's the same with the female inmates. They need that image. Thank you for being parents to your kids. My cousin, Christy, mom's youngest sister's daughter, posted something online yesterday, and I want to be mindful for kind of going through this. I hope you can see this. I wanted to show the actual Facebook page, but she made the comment here, something she shared, that Mother's Day is hard. Sometimes we can see that it's not a celebration for everybody, is it? If your mother is deceased, if your mother has gone on, there's a lot of memories. There's good things, but there's also sadness. You can have all kinds of issues just with divorce or with estrange. You can have, what do they list, 10 different issues here. And I want to be mindful of that today. We're going to be talking about godly mothers, but a lot of kids and a lot of kids don't really have that situation. So I'm mindful for the fact that that this isn't always the same for every individual. It's not the same when the mother really isn't there to help right now. There's some statements about mothers that I thought was noteworthy. When I researched this, it came back kind of interesting. Billy Sunday has a couple of comments, a famous pastor, but he said, try praising your wife, even if it does frighten her at first. You know, usually Teresa will probably want to know what I've bought. Okay, you're being nice, what have you bought? What have you done? There's another farm implement or something that's out there, maybe another trailer or something. I have this affinity towards utility trailers. I've got a few of them. He also said there is nothing in the world of art like the songs mothers used to sing. Can you relate to that? There's a connection between a child and a mother. I mean, each one of us was part of our mother at one time. And I still remember, and all of us six kids remember the songs that mom used to sing to us. Looking back at it, I think some of it was kind of child abuse. I mean, not that she couldn't sing, but they were just sad songs. Old Shep, I mean, this song about a dog that dies at the end, and we're all bawling, you know, we're crying. I don't think Shep ever lived, but in our minds he did. I was probably in high school before I realized there was more than just country and western. I don't think they've still forgiven me for liking some of the other music. This was spotted on a church sign. If evolution is true, how come mothers still have only two hands? It's really true, isn't it? They do so much. There's so much things that are involved in being a mom that it's they need more than two hands. I think a mom having six kids in a time frame that was pretty short, she needed more hands to do that. But somehow or another, she got it done. Abraham Lincoln, I remember my mother's prayers, and they have always followed me. They have clung to me all my life. I heard once, where would we be without the prayers of our mothers? You know, that's nationwide. That's not just in the church. But a mother's prayers have brought people through so many things. I think of all the wars and all the servicemen that are out there. And it's just amazing what those prayers mean. And it's not taken back from the godly fathers that are out there. But boy, where would we be without our mother's prayers? It's something that just goes without saying. I thank that for mom. She prayed for us. I want to give tribute before I forget that. I think you guys possibly have heard this story, but Teresa and I met through a connection with my mother. I was living in Denver at the time. It was back in mid-80s, I guess, when we first were at the church there together. The church that I'd been attending to was just a block from the house. It was having all kinds of problems. I never really felt comfortable there, but yet it was a church that was just close by. There had been a revival in First Baptist Bloomfield, and a music director, the guy that led the music for that revival, came out of the church that mom said I should go to, Applewood Baptist. I'd seen it, but I hadn't attended it, and I remember attending that church. And Teresa, I don't know if it was the first Sunday or whenever, I would go up to the balcony and kind of hide in the back by myself. And there was a young lady in the choir. If memory serves me right, you would be on my left-hand side, the right-hand side of the choir. And she caught my eye. And God put us together. It took a while. I had to move to Alaska and get 3,000 miles away before we started getting interest in one another. But yet it was Mom. Without that connection, I would have never attended that church. She didn't know she was doing that. None of us knew that was happening. But that's how the power of God works through mothers or through anybody. That connection was there. It was your disobedience. God punished you for putting me together. But it was an answer to my mom's prayer. So, our Bible, we got several Bible passages. Just a word of caution. If you see somebody come in to speak, if they're like me, I tab all the different places I'm going to be referring to today. So you can kind of look at those tabs. There's five of them. It'll kind of give you a clue for how long we're going to be here today. Luke chapter 1, 34 through 38. Dr. Luke has got some things to say here that we're gonna visit. Luke chapter 1, verses 34 through 38. Then Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I do not know a man?" We're going to go back up and pick up some of the other verses later, but this is where we're starting right now. Gabriel has made his presence known to Mary, told her the plan, and she's confused. She says, "I have never been with a man. I'm confused how this is going to happen." And the angel answered and said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the highest will overshadow you. Therefore also that Holy One who is to be born will be called the Son of God." That's pretty specific, isn't it? "Now indeed Elizabeth, your relative, has also conceived a son in her old age, and this is now the sixth month of her who was called barren. For with God nothing will be impossible." Then Mary said, "Behold, the maidservant of the Lord, let it be to me according to your word." And the angel departed from her. Did Mary do what Jonah did? When Jonah was given the direction from God how to proceed, he fled, he ran. What did Mary say? That last verse, she says, "I'm your maidservant of the Lord. Let it be me according to your word." She didn't shirk the responsibility. It's kind of an old Western term. I know in Lonesome Dove, I think when Deeks dies, they said he never shirked a task. If we ask him to do something, he did it. And it's kind of a word that we don't use much now, but Mary wouldn't walk away from what she was asked to do. And the angel departed from her. God picked her for a reason. If we have time, we're going to go through some of those specifics. But he knew what Mary was capable of doing, and she was the perfect earthly mother for Jesus. Mary asks a simple question, "How can this be, since I do not know a man?" There's a comment here from the study Bible I have. David Jeremiah said, "Asking in faith is very different from asking out of doubt." She wasn't doubting God. She just did not understand. She wanted clarifications. Mary's question merely sought clarification about what puzzled her. She did not dismiss the angelic message in unbelief. She admitted her inability to comprehend the revealed will of God, demonstrated her humility and her humanity, not hesitation. It's just his comments, but I think it's appropriate. I would have said, "Are you really talking to me?" There's somebody else here. I'm not up for that task that you want me to be. But if you look back on your life, if you would have told me even, not that far past, I'd be doing what I'm doing now in the jail ministry or supply preaching, I would think you're crazy. If God wants you to do something, he's going to provide those avenues for you to do those things. He will take your weaknesses and make them into your strengths. And I've seen that over and over with different people. Gabriel had a message for her, and Mary was willing to proceed with that. The virgin birth of Christ. This is kind of an interesting passage. Let's turn to Isaiah 7:14. It's a Christmas story that we're all kind of familiar with. We love to go back to Isaiah and say, hey, look at this prophecy. Look what God said was going to happen. Again, Isaiah 7, verse 14. It's on the screen here, but it's an interesting account. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. The Hebrew word for virgin is Alma, which means a woman who is pure and virtuous and has not been intimate with the man. Jesus of heaven, the Son of God, was miraculously born through Mary without the agency of a man. Jesus was literally the Son of God on earth. And then I put in parentheses there, he was already and forever the Son of God in heaven. There never was a time when Jesus was not, and there never will be a time when he ceases to be. But there was a time when he became man. And that's what Gabriel has told Mary. That's what was predicted, prophesied in Isaiah. It's an interesting account. I'm going to add a little bit of confusion here. And if you're like me, this was only 2 or 3 years ago where this account came known to me. Turn, if you will, then to chapter 8 of Isaiah. We're going to be looking at verses 1 through 4 of chapter 8. Remember, the first passage was the previous chapter, verse 14. Chapter 8 says, verse 1, Moreover, the Lord said to me, Take a large scroll and write on it with a man's pen concerning Meir Shalai Hash-Baz. And I know I butchered that, but if somebody knows how to say it, volunteer. And I will take for myself faithful witnesses to record Uriah the priest and Zechariah the son of Jeberechiah. Then I went to the prophetess, and she conceived and bore a son. Then the Lord said to me, Call his name Meir Shalai Hash-Baz, for before the child have been knowledge to cry, My father and my mother, the riches of Damascus and the spoils of Samaria will be taken away before the king of Assyria. This is a prophecy that was fulfilled in more than one occasion. And it's even deeper than that. I don't fully understand it. It's called a typological type prophecy. If you're witnessing to a Jewish person and they are believing in the Old Testament without believing that Christ is the Messiah, they will take Isaiah chapter 7, verse 14, and say that prophecy was fulfilled in the first verses of chapter 8. And when I read this and I study it and I look at the scholars that I put faith in, they will say that's true. But it's a prophecy then that went on to include Jesus in the New Testament. But we've got to be careful how we do that, because I wasn't even taught that. I looked at 7:14 and said that is nothing but talking about Christ. And they can't deny the fact that, hey, something happened even there in the next chapter that fulfilled at least a portion of that prophecy. Totally different. This wasn't a virgin birth. The word that is used to describe this female here said that she knew a man. It implies that it is totally different than what happens in the New Testament. But it's a complicated process. I can give you some more information on that if you're interested. But it's called a typological type prophecy. Where I read about this was actually on a radio program once and then started researching it. And I've talked to some of my Jewish friends, and they discount everything and how we tie that back to Jesus, because we omit what's being happening here. In verse 14, it specifically, as we pointed out here, that term for virgin means that she did not know a man. But in here, it's a birth that she did know that man. Mary didn't know the complete meaning of what the angel was trying to explain to her, but she did know that he had a plan for her that was going to affect man for all time, wasn't it? There's a story here when we start talking about the roles of mother, and we're talking about how difficult it is. This story was given, and I think it is appropriate. But a mother is putting her son to bed the evening of his fifth birthday, the last night that he's going to go to bed, and he's 4 years old. She said, Kevin, this is the last night of your fourth year. I said, Kevin was old enough to communicate with his hands all year long. When somebody had asked him how old he was, he'd hold up four fingers. He was now ready to hold up four fingers plus a thumb. When you wake up tomorrow morning, do you know how old you'll be? Without hesitation, Kevin held up that entire hand and said, I'll be a handful. There's a lot of truth to that, isn't it? I can't imagine with six kids what we were like at times. I think we were decent kids. But I can imagine Mom especially, because she was the one that was always there. There was days that she said, wow, you know, go out and play. Please be gone. Go to the pond. But we are a handful, aren't we? I still remember, Dad had an 8mm super camera. And every birthday, every Christmas, that thing came out. And we'd be on the front porch, Governador Camp, Gomez Camp initially. Mom would have the nice cake that we're holding. And we're not even in school yet. We're trying to hold this thing up. And you're saying, somebody help the kids. You know, that cake is just about to topple. But we were a handful. We were amazing. We came running home one day out at Gomez. And Jimmy's in town now, but he's with Mom. But we'd cross the fence into the septic pond out there, and we all could climb out, but Jimmy couldn't. We couldn't get him. He wasn't in the pond, but he was just on the bank on the inside of it. So we went at home to get Mom. We said, Jimmy's in the pond. Jimmy's in the septic pond, you know. Mom couldn't swim, but she, I don't know if she wanted to or not. She was so relieved when she got there that all he'd do is just pull him out. But we were a handful indeed. Was Jesus a handful for Mary? You know, I've thought a lot about what the childhood of Jesus was like. He was perfect. He didn't sin. But he was still a child, wasn't he? I mean, he was still an infant. We know he didn't sin, but being the mother, the earthly mother of God's Son, has some responsibility, doesn't it? We're going to get into that. Luke chapter 1, verse 26 through 28. Luke 1, 26 through 28. Now in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin betrothed. Hope I've got the right passage here. To a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph, to the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary. And having come in, the angel said to her, Rejoice highly, favored one. The Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women. What does it mean to be highly favored? Was Mary as close as you could get to being perfect? There was something unique about her. I mean, of all the choices God had, he chose Mary. And I read some comments on it here that I'm not for sure exactly where I take that. But highly favored, if you go back to the actual translation, the best way to say that is she was full of grace. Mary's not the mother of God. She's not the heavenly mother of God. She's the earthly mother of God. But she's full of grace. When we read earlier about her response to what Gabriel had told her, she was willing to do this. She knew what God wanted her to do, and she was willing to do that. She never wavered from her complete submission to God's plan, even though it was going to be a tough row to hoe. She was nervous and unsure of her abilities. She undoubtedly knew that there would be pain and suffering. Right off the bat, what is part of that pain? What am I going to tell Joseph? She had a little help on that one, didn't she? Joseph got a visit also. Our son that you've been praying for and that this church has supported in Ukraine is named after this Joseph. His due date was December 24th. Teresa was late. The 29th of December he was born, and we named him after the Joseph of the story there, when you stop and think about it, Joseph was a pretty special man too, wasn't he? He was a very special man to do what he did. And he had that appearance from the angel, and he knew God was in this, and he was supportive of Mary. He was supportive of what God was doing there. I'm sure Mary prayed, if God is in this, it will be okay. And that's where we are in our life. If God is asking you to do something, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. Our faith is directly related to sometimes how much we worry. When you really think about it, God doesn't want us to worry. If you're in tune and you're knowing He's doing what you're doing, what He wants you to do, it's going to be there. She was a mother worth imitating, wasn't she? You can always look back and say, "I wish I was more like her. I wish I was there." Joseph and Mary knew what was happening, but did the public? There were people that I'm sure still were looking at it from the standpoint of saying that she should be stoned, and that was the custom of that time. If she was unmarried and with child, especially not even her betrothed husband, she would have been stoned. There's a story here that talks about somebody trying to be perfect, an earthly woman. Linda Huckins of Malden, Massachusetts, tried perfection on the day of her daughter's marriage. As she tells the story, she went to the front of the church to light one of the three candles. The way I picture this is maybe one candle was lit, and the parents or whoever the parties were actually lighting those candles. Not realizing the potential hazard, I got too close and set my acrylic nail on fire. Okay. Trying not to ruin my daughter's big day, I calmly lit the candle from my flaming nail, and then like a gunslinger with his six-shooter, I blew it out. Can you picture that? Needless to say, my blackened nail was the talk of the reception. I'm sure there were people like me that were saying, was that on purpose? Was that really there? And this is recorded in Rolling Down the Aisle. It's a story of just different things that have happened in weddings and stuff. They say weddings, and I can kind of attest to that, having done Joe's wedding last June. But weddings are more difficult than even funerals because you have so many different people you're trying to please. You've got the bride and the groom, you've got the families, and everybody has their own plan about how the wedding should be. And if you're sitting here trying to officiate it, it can get pretty difficult. It's a concept. I'm thankful that God was in the service with Joe and Dasha. How many of you know Dr. Benjamin Carson? He wrote a book. When I put this down, he actually wasn't even a presidential candidate, but he wrote a book called, let me get the actual title of it for you. I have that book. It's called Gifted Hands. He wrote it in 1990. But he tells a story about his mother, Mrs. Carson. She was a single mom raising her kids, and she obviously did quite a good job on it. But she insisted that Ben and his brother Curtis write a book report every couple of weeks. This wasn't for school, this was for their mom. Ben and Curtis dutifully obeyed. About the time he was in junior high, Ben finally realized something was quite shocking. His mom couldn't read. For years, Ben had read books and scratched out reports, assuming that his mom was checking every word, but she didn't have a clue what he was saying. I think in the book it goes into more detail, and she would actually have some of her friends grade them and make corrections on them and some, but something she didn't have an education, she couldn't even read. Now consider this, raised by an illiterate mother, Ben grew up to be a world-famous surgeon who was featured in many articles and was the author of several books. This title of that book, Gifted Hands, he will talk about, he said it was just something different about what he could do. The coordination with his hands and his mind was just instantaneously. He said, I can't really talk about it, but it's like everything, there was another dimension that I could see that. When he was in college, he got scholarships to help him. He went to some nice colleges to get his medical degree. But the summer jobs he used to have in his hometown was being a crane operator. And any time he had a break, they wanted him back on that crane because he could do things that nobody else could. He's a very gifted person. The mom stepped up to provide something she couldn't do. If you know anything about my mom, she didn't have the opportunity for a lot of education. She struggled with education. I remember on a bookshelf, there were some of her books that she used to have, and we would go through it, and I could see some of her struggles that she would have in that. But she passed on to her kids a good education. If you know anything about us, most of us are, you know, educated way beyond what Mom was, and she made sure we were there for it. If you know Mom, she's as sharp as a tack. But for whatever reason, there was things that were there that prevented her from really getting the education. She writes and she reads. She's unbelievable. She'll share some of the books that she's reading now, and it's a deep subject that she gets into. But yet she had a weakness in her life, and she made it a strength in her kids' life. She gave her boys, this is talking about Mrs. Carson, she gave her boys what she had, interest, accountability, and the courage to demand extra work. She demanded that. In that book, Dr. Carson talks about an incident. He said when he was a younger man, I believe he was still in school, in high school, and he said he had a temper issue. He had a temper that was just uncontrollable at times. And he said he got in an argument with a friend, and before he's known it, he's pulled out a knife and tried to stab his friend. And he said the hand of God was with him. He said, when I stabbed him, I hit his belt buckle. The guy didn't have a scratch on him. But he said, I was literally just inches away from probably being arrested and having a life that would be totally different. But he walked away from that incident. And if memory serves me right, he went to the bathroom, locked himself in, and he said, God, I got to get a grip on this. I got to get a grip on the anger that I have. And God took that from him. He said, I've never had the issue with anger after that incident. He realized just how likely it was that he could have been in a situation where his life could have been totally different. The virtuous wife. Turn, if you will, to Proverbs chapter 31. We're going to be reading verses 10 through 31 of Proverbs chapter 31. If you're counting, we're on the fifth one here, guys. We might get out a little bit early even. Our son, when he was the youth minister at our church, Joe actually had a Mother's Day message on this particular passage. We tried to find it. We recorded the services, but we couldn't find this one. But on the way down from Colorado Day, we listened to another Mother's Day service that he gave. He got a communications degree from Colorado State, and he's a gifted communicator. Proverbs 31, chapter 10 through 31. If you will, especially women here, mothers, take note of the first verse, verse 10 of chapter 31. Who can find a virtuous wife? It's impossible to going to be listing all the traits that are listed here. It's impossible, but these are some of the attributes of a virtuous wife. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She considers a field and buys it. From her profit she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good, and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands to the distance, and her hand holds the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor, yet she reaches out her hands to the needy. Verse 21, she is not afraid of snow. And this passage actually means that at a time of need, she's not afraid of that. She knows she'll be able to vine. It's not that she's talking about a snowstorm or anything. For all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Purple being the sign of royalty. She makes her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. She will rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is the law of kindness. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Is that a pretty high bar that's been set for a virtuous wife? Yeah. I mean, I can think of attributes to Mom, to Teresa, to women I know, but to say each one of them can do every one of those things? No, you can't do that. Remember what that first verse in 10 said. This is what is being strived for. This is who can find this. But that's what things are going to be like in heaven. Heaven is going to be perfect that way. This is an acrostic poem that was written in Proverbs, meaning that it's Proverbs, so it's going to be Hebrew, Old Testament Hebrew. Give me a nod. And so every of the 22 lines is a letter of the Hebrew alphabet in order. And it's amazing how we can even put that in English, and there's still symmetry and still beauty to it. She never sleeps and she always works. That's the one thing in here I can say I'm almost of every mother. When it comes to Teresa, I can't keep up with her. Christmas Eve, we're trying to get things ready for Christmas morning, especially when the boys were little. I go to bed at 1 or 2. She's up till 4 or 5. It's just amazing what she does. She doesn't do the turkey. I do help on that. But she never sleeps and she always works. That's the reality of this here. She is like merchant ships. And I'm not for sure. I think it's talking more about the cargo that they bring in, the wealth and the goods they bring in. And she is always there providing for that household with all the things that are needed. She runs a farm. She even purchased this farm, I think, is a way of words. Teresa, you got anything in mind there? Not quite. She manages a staff. She is an excellent seamstress. She cooks, cleans, and homeschools her children. Teresa wanted it this year for Christmas, and we came from some good friends that we knew in Alaska that said, you need one of these, a robo vacuum cleaner. It's been fun just to see it work. I mean, you have to put down the magnetic tape. It could kill itself on the stairways or whatever, you know. But it's been fun just to play with it. But it does a pretty good job. It gets confused a lot. It'll get under a chair and it doesn't know what to do. But it's fun. But I think she works more getting everything set up for that robo-vac than it would be just to vacuum it. But it's interesting. It goes back to its station and parks itself and even empties itself. It's amazing. She cooks, cleans, and homeschools for her children. Teresa was unbelievable. And Mom is the same. She worked with us kids. Teresa worked with her kids. When we went to Bayfield, she would go to any of the boys' teachers and said, I'm available. I'm at home. I'm a home mother. I'm here. Mornings you would have with one boys' teacher. Afternoons she would have with the other boys' teacher. The boys just thought that was normal. She was the only one in the classroom doing it. The teachers had free help, and Teresa was extremely good at that. But it helped tremendously. The boys in mid school, she offered to do the same thing, but the mid school teachers didn't really like that. So she walked away from that. But we were heavily involved in their education. Mom always kept on top of what we were doing. If she thought we were slacking, she let it be known. In the summer, she used to have homework assignments for us. She was trying to keep us sharp on different things. But she was interested in her education. She has a feast waiting for her husband. There's a reason I'm slightly or I am overweight. Teresa cooks extremely well. Mom, we used to have people laugh at us because they'd come over to the house and you'd see a container that Mom was cooking from and it was like she was feeding an army. But you always cooked for leftovers too, didn't you? You were there. It was interesting. It's something to look at, but don't kid yourself from the standpoint of thinking that each mother can be this perfect person. It's not going to be there. Mary had faults, didn't she? We're in a situation where one of the things that we did in Joseph's sermon that he was talking about was when Jesus turned water into wine. Why did he do that? Mary asked him to. He was in with the men. He was just beginning his ministry, and he was in with the men going over things, and she came in. She says, they ran out of wine. And his comment was, they said, what Joseph said in his message and what I say to you is, kids, don't try this yourself. He said, woman, why does it concern me? He's talking to his mother. But what he's saying is, you know, I'm no longer just your child. I'm also now got God's plans to do here on earth, and I'm trying to get to this point. It's not my time yet. But what did he end up doing? He turned water into wine. He turned a lot of water into wine. Mother's requests go a long ways, don't they? Yeah, they better go a long ways. I remember being up at a board meeting at Hesper's camp, and I can't remember all the specifics, but I got a call that Mom needed something. And I'm chairman of the board right then, and we're in this meeting. And I looked at Kevin, the director of the camp, said, I got to go. Mom's called. That's priority. That's the number one priority. That's where you got to be there. Mary was involved with Jesus from the conception of him to the crucifixion of him. And this last slide, it really kind of put it into perspective of where we were. But Mary was with Jesus at his crucifixion on the hill of Golgotha. As Jesus was about to be crucified, a small group of people gathered at the foot of the hill to watch. A lot of the images we see show her right at the foot of the cross. And there may be a passage in there, but that's not really implied here, I don't believe. In that group was Mary, his mother. What was the charge against Jesus? What was he being crucified for? What's that?
He said he
was the king of the Jews. Yeah. This man is saying he's the Son of God. He's God. Did that go over very well with the Jewish authorities or the Romans? You're claiming to be God? That's what Jesus, when he was asked by his mom to change the water into wine, he said, I can't really go there yet. It's not time yet. But yet he was in a situation where that charge was against him. To prevent Jesus' death, all she had to do in that moment was step forward and say, he's not the Son of God. He's the son of Joseph. She could have saved her son's life by just saying, I don't know what he's telling you, but Joseph is his father. Do not kill him. And then she gets very specific. I remember the night in some secluded place when Joseph and I first came together. This isn't scriptural. This isn't from the Bible. This is what she could have done. That Joseph is his father. This Jesus is not the Son of God. There's times that I do things because I know the ultimate thing will save, will help somebody. And I may be somewhat disingenuous in what I'm doing, but if it helps somebody, you can kind of justify that. Could Mary do that? She didn't. Mary stood there and watched her son die because she knew in her heart that the charge against him was true. He is the Son of God. The earthly mother of Jesus knows that better than anybody, doesn't she? He was the Son of God. She couldn't lie for her son because it didn't fit the plan. And I don't know if that really would have stopped it or not, because Jesus would have just denied all of that, wouldn't he? He would have still claimed that. But it puts it in a perspective that shows the difficulty that Mary had watching what was happening. Jesus made sure that the others, especially the 12, at least the 11 that were still obedient to him, would take care of his mom. But he had to go to that cross. He had to die on that cross. He had to be in that situation for each and every one of us. We're going to have a hymn of invitation. One of the things that I think is being a person that supply preaches in different churches is the invitation. It's hard. It's awkward. There is so much of a lack of response on invitations that a lot of times a lot of churches don't even do that. I'm guilty of being in a position where it would be good right now just to go and sit down and not be here for anybody. But I want to make sure that we have that opportunity. If any one of you need to do those things to get right with God, whether that be salvation, whether that be baptism, whether that be membership into this church, that we formally have that time where you can come forward. You can talk to the men of this church or any of the leaders in this church and talk to them and get that right. I don't want to ever be in a position where we don't do things just because it's not comfortable. The Bible is full of examples that where people had to come forward when they wanted to do something for God. And that's what this hymn of invitation will do. Thank you all for letting me be here today.